This podcast is offered by Jikoji Zen Center on the web at jikoji.org. Our programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
So Siddhartha, there are various stories, but the one I'm going to tell you is that he snuck out and he saw some things that he had never seen before. He saw an old person, maybe who's just really old and couldn't get around very well, gray hair, wrinkles. He saw a sick person, somebody just lying on the side of the road. Remember, this is in India now, so it's, you know, fairly poor country, I think, unless you were royalty. And then he saw a dead person. And he also saw a wandering ascetic. This is a person who is practicing very severe practices, like not eating, not sleeping, just trying to get somewhere spiritually by doing these types of, you know, extreme practices. So soon after he saw these things, Siddhartha actually left his family to find the truth about reality, because he realized it was not within the palace gates. So he started to practice also some ascetic practices, these extreme practices. He it's said that he slept on a bed of nails, that he deprived himself of sleep, of food. He was so skinny. Sometimes you see pictures of him so skinny you can see his bones through his skin. And one day he was sitting, he was just on the side of the road sitting, and the girl felt sorry for him and offered him a bowl of milk. He took it and drank it. Siddhartha then realized there was a middle way. It doesn't have to be extremely luxurious or extremely hard, difficult. There's a way in the middle to live. Siddhartha remembered sitting on a hill watching some workers plow his father's field. And he remembered the feeling of peace when he saw that. So he decided to make sitting his spiritual practice. So he sat under a Bodhi tree for, it is said, about 49 days. And on the 49th day, and during this time, he had some really great insights. And he saw the morning star rise. And his greatest insight, he touched the earth. And he said, "I and all beings and the great earth simultaneously achieve the way. I and all beings and the great earth simultaneously achieve the way." From there, he became known as the Buddha, which means enlightened one. During his time of meditation, he came up with what we now know as the Four Noble Truths. The first is that there is suffering. In life, there is suffering. The second noble truth is that there is a cause of suffering. The third noble truth is that there is an end to suffering. And the fourth noble truth is that there is a path that leads out of suffering. What is this path? This path is called the Eightfold Path. I'll share these eight views with you, these eight ways or paths. The first is right view. Right view means seeing things as they are, not adding any labels or thinking this is good or bad. No judgment around it. It's what it is, right view. The second is right thought. This is thinking in accord with the way things are. So it's not like you're going to wish that it were some way different. You're just going to say, this is the way it is. Right thought. There's right speech. This is refraining from or not using harsh or harmful speech. Right action. Acting in accord with the precepts. I'll go over those later. Right livelihood. Think about your work. What do you do? Are you making your living in a way that limits suffering? Right effort. Making the proper effort in your Buddhist practice. That means Zazen. Right mindfulness. Being aware of what you're thinking. Right mindfulness. And the last is right concentration or meditation. Practicing meditation with your body, heart, and mind. That's the Eightfold Path. Now I mentioned the precepts, and there are 10 precepts. So just a little bit about maybe a little bit about this that I'm wearing. This is called a Rakusu, and some of us here do have them. I don't know if Emmy does. Emmy's not here. When one decides to follow the Buddhist path, you may have a desire to show people that you're on this path. You don't have to, but you can decide to. And first, you have to have a teacher. So your teacher would then, you would ask whoever it is that is your teacher, usually from a Zen place like this. And you practice for a while, and then you may decide, this is the path I would like. And you can ask them to be your teacher. ask that person to be your teacher. And at a certain point, your teacher may, you may ask about sewing a raksu. We sew these by hand. And when you finish sewing the raksu, your teacher will write some things on the back for you, give you a name, a Buddhist name. And then there's a ceremony called Jukai ceremony, where you receive actually 16 precepts. But I will share with you what the 10 grave precepts are. The first is, these are, so let me just mention, these are not like rules. These are not rules, they're guidelines. Because we mess up, we can mess up on these things. And when you realize you've messed up, then you just are mindful of it, and then you just correct yourself, or you try not to make that same, try not to do that again, or just be more mindful, right? It's nothing to really berate yourself about, or, you know, think, oh, I'm such a bad person. No, these are just guidelines by which to live. The first one is no killing life. Now, this is really not possible. When we drive on the road, we drive over bugs and, you know, when you walk, you could walk on ants or insects. You know, if you see, I'm not afraid of spiders. So if I see a spider in my house, I capture it and I bring it outside. I try not to kill life. The second one is no lying. Tell the truth. The third one is no stealing. The fourth is no sexual misconduct. The fifth one is no abusing intoxicants. So this is not to say that you can't, like, have a glass of wine or, you know, whatever it is that you enjoy, but not to be excessive or abuse it. The sixth one is no praising self and blaming others. No praising self and blaming others. The seventh one is no dwelling on past mistakes. Don't even talk about it. Just don't even dwell on it. Make a mistake, okay, learn from it, move on. The eighth precept is no hoarding materials or teachings. What does that mean? No hoarding materials. You know, sometimes we're collectors of things, and that's okay, as long as you're not hoarding. Know when there's enough. And teachings. I am sharing with you a teaching, or maybe many teachings. And I'm happy to be sharing them with you. It's part one of the precepts. The ninth precept is no being angry. Now, let me just say, you know, we get angry. Just don't dwell on it. That's all. You can be angry for maybe as long as you need to, but don't carry it around. No grudges. No. And the 10th is no abusing the three treasures, Buddha, Dharma, Sangha. So Dharma is basically what I'm sharing with you today, truth. Sangha is our community. Those people that you practice with. We are all Sangha today. And I appreciate all of you. So, how do we bring, so Zen is not just sitting on the cushion. It's not just sitting here, either at home or here in the Zendo. It's just not that. It's actually bringing Zen into your everyday life. You don't have to be sitting while you're doing everyday life, right? We go to work, clean our homes, we drive, you know, we cook, we tend to our loved ones, we tend to ourselves. So I'd like to share with you the five daily recollections. They go like this. I'm of the nature to grow old. There is no way to escape growing old. I am of the nature to have ill health. There is no way to escape having ill health. I am of the nature to die. There is no way to escape death. All that is dear to me and everything I have and everything I love are of the nature to change. There is no way to escape from losing them. And the last, my actions are my only true belongings. Let me say that again. My actions are my only true belongings. I cannot escape the consequences of my actions. My actions are the ground on which I stand. So these five daily recollections give us a clue as to how to live. How to pay attention to how you live, how you love, how you speak, what you think about. Are your actions kind? Are your actions honest and true to who you are? Are your actions in line with helping others and being of benefit? Not just to other people, but to the earth and the sky and to all beings. Are your actions generous or are they selfish? Ask yourself, how are you living your life? I mean, even, thank you, even the decision to not act is an action. It's a decision that you make. I do have something to say about walking meditation. What do you do when you walk to the grocery store? You leave your car. And you walk to the grocery store. What are you thinking about? thinking about what you're going to buy. Right? Well, if you can, think about the steps you're taking. Be aware of your steps. Now, if you decide that, so I have a lot of things going on in my head right now, but let's just say, you know, when we leave here, when we get up and we restore the Zendo to how it looked before this talk, what if you just paid attention to every step that you took, where you're stepping and every step? That's mindfulness. That's being aware. That's actually hin-hin, walking meditation. You can practice that anytime you want or think about it. But sometimes, you know, we zip through our lives, don't we? We zip. We go here, go there, you know, without really thinking about, like, where are we in space? The only time it really comes into focus is when you're sitting, Zazen. Think about it. Because you're actually concentrating on your sitting and your breath. You can bring that to before you answer your phone. You can take a breath, put a smile on your face, and answer the phone. Before you go into a meeting at work, you may want to take a few breaths, take a you know, 5 or 10 seconds to settle yourself down, feel your body, you know, lower your heart rate a little bit, and enter in with more of an openness going into meetings or with people that you are going to talk to, or whatever it is, whatever you do in your life. You can do this with your family, with your friends. So yeah, kinhin's really important, because you can actually do it every time you take steps. There is no should. Sorry, that's to me, that's a habit of saying should, and I'm trying to release that from my vocabulary. No. Correct. Don't say should. Avoid saying should.
Right? It's all a part of it. It's
yeah.
Not even part of it.
Yeah. Right.
That's why I think somehow it's inexplicable, finally. Right?
Hey, thank you, Todd. So, you know, we rarely realize our breath. Do we not? It comes naturally. It just happens. If you exercise, you breathe harder, right? And when you're resting, you really can notice it when you're sitting, especially Zazen. Yeah. So even just taking a few seconds every now and then to center yourself by taking breath is so helpful. It brings you back to your body. And your mind also engages with that because you're thinking about it, and then you make it happen. Yes.
I totally appreciate everything that But spontaneity.
Ah. Things are totally spontaneous. Sometimes things just happen. We don't have control over very much, really. I can't control the wind, can you? I can't control the birds chirping or the trees, the leaves moving or falling. But things happen spontaneously. It could be while you're driving, somebody swerves in front of you. You have to react. That's natural. Yes.
I'm talking about fun spontaneity.
Yeah, fun spontaneity is good.
And one thing I find is that as I get older, I feel more spontaneous.
Yeah.
I don't give so much of a care.
Right. That's true.
And because of this practice, the nature of the spontaneity tends to be very good.
Ah, before practice.
Or maybe just when I was younger.
Yeah.
But certainly with practice.
Right. So I'm glad you brought the word joy into this, because actually, Zazen is forget the words, but Zazen is a practice of ease and joy. Ease and joy. That's why there's the relaxation. It's easy, right? You're going to sit upright. And you maintain this good posture because, you know, if you sit slumped, it's really hard to sit slumped for a long time. But if you sit upright and you let your bones and your body support you, your muscles and tendons and everything else involved, it opens your chest. You can breathe better. You can sit better. Yeah, of course. And then there's some joy that happens. Maybe not right away, especially if you're uncomfortable, you know, and you haven't found the right sitting position for yourself that works. But if you, I'll just share that I've been practicing Zazen for 9 years now, and my life is so joyful. Now, I didn't sit because I was joyful. I mean, I didn't start sitting to get joyful. It's a byproduct. A byproduct. Right. And so that's where I was going to go, is when you sit, there should be no goal in mind. Right. You're just going to set a timer. Or you're going to decide, you know, I'm just going to sit this long and then decide to get up. I like to use a timer. I just have a little chime that goes off when I'm done. I set a timer and I go. But there is no goal in sitting. Don't think it'll make you a better person. Don't think that it will, you know, solve all your problems. Don't think that it will do one thing or the next. You want to have kind of this empty mind, this mind of just sitting and being in the present moment, right here, right now. Don't be in the future. Don't be in the past. What really matters is being here right now. When you meet people, let's say, let me give you an example. For example, let's say, you have a spouse. Let's say you have a spouse or a boyfriend or a girlfriend. Tell me, do you have an idea of how they are? And when they're not that way, you become upset. That's habit thinking, because you have a habit of how you view this person. You have a view of how you view this person. You have this kind of fixed idea of this person. But how about this? How about when you see this spouse or your boyfriend, girlfriend, whoever it is, anyone you meet actually, but let's just focus on this one person that you're thinking of. What if every time you saw them, they were like a new person? Like somebody you don't know. Because think about it. Your person may come in through the door and have gone through something. And are you going to get mad because they're some way different? They didn't kiss you because, you know, they're in a state, or it, you know, they're angry because something happened or whatever it is. What I'll say is meet the person where they are. Meet that person where they are in this moment, in that moment, in every moment. Does that make sense? Yeah. Let go of what your habit thinking is. Not only of people that you know and love, but you may see a person, let's say you see a person that is, let's say, a homeless person. You pass a homeless person on the street. You may have ideas about this person, but what if you see this person with compassion, wondering what's their story? How did they get here? Open your heart to everyone. That's not to say that if you were going to be attacked, that you're going to open your heart to that person. You need to defend yourself. I'm not saying that. I am just saying that if you have the space to meet a person as they are, it's helpful. Not just to you, but to them as well. Well, the first is the right view, the right thinking. It's not about you. It's about them. Even if it's directed towards you, it's not about you. It's about them. It's their cause and condition. It's their conditioning that makes them that way. You may trigger it. Yeah. Right. And that's where you can practice.
Exactly.
That's where you practice in that moment.
Yeah.
You practice. You have to. And it doesn't happen like that. It's something you have to practice. I mean, that's why we call our sitting a sitting practice, because we have to practice it all the time.
So what would you do? How do I practice it? As they exhibited violence towards me. Mm-hmm. Also, quite
in their face and everything. I would just say, are you okay? No, really. It's about them. Are you okay? And you can say.
It's a rhetorical question.
Yeah. No, I understand what you're saying.
Anyway, that's where it seems like my practice.
Sure. Yeah, right. And if that's the right response, then do it. Then leave.
Practice.
But that's the practice.
So I could say the same thing about my leg. It's great, right? My leg is incredible amount of difficulty. I'm sitting. When is the sitting going to be over?
That happens a lot, right? Wow, it's a long time. 40 minutes is a long time. And one last thing about driving, bring your practice to your driving. Bring your compassion. You don't know where anybody in the car is. You don't know what they're thinking and what they're going through. You have no idea. Be compassionate. If they cut in front of you, that's their problem. I mean, if you crash into them, it's your problem too, but really, you know, the thinking is not to react, just respond.
Are these drivers right behind them?
Sure.
And do compassionate move?
Just move around. Just move around. Don't, you know. So, because if you think a thought, it's just your idea of them. It's just an idea. That's all. You're making it up. You don't really know the reality. You're just making it up in your head. Because it's a story you tell yourself, right? About these other drivers. Ryan?
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, so... Bring your practice to your driving as well. I mean, it's very helpful to, and let others in, right? Don't speed up when they want to merge. Let them in. Be kind. Right? Be compassionate. You know, watch your reaction when you drive. Do you get mad? I used to get mad. I don't get mad so much anymore. Because I'm more aware. Awareness is everything.
Thank you for listening to this podcast offered by Jokoji Zen Center. Our Dharma talks are offered free of charge. And this is made possible by the donations we receive. Your support helps us to continue to offer the Dharma. For more information about Jokoji, please visit us on the web at jokoji.org.